This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 322. Today, CJ and I are going to talk about cutting your cloud costs and cloud competition. Recorded live September the 26th, 2019. For those of us familiar with ShareGate, we know that they've always been about SharePoint and Office 365 migration. But now that we've all moved to the cloud, like me, you're probably thinking, how about how to scale your Office 365 to a full self-serve environment without worrying about thousands of groups and teams popping up out of nowhere, aka sprawl. That's why the folks at ShareGate developed ShareGate Apricot. It's a solution that helps us automate our Office 365 groups governance by allowing us to collaborate with users to keep everyone accountable for the things they create. Their super simple to use in-app experience lets us lighten our load by delegating group management responsibilities to users we trust, aka no more sprawl. Want to get your hands on ShareGate Apricot? Try it for free for 30 days at ShareGate.com/collegeshow. Good morning, CJ. How are you doing today?
Very well. Very well. Other than it, summer being totally over and it's bucketing with rain outside. But it is Seattle after all.
It sounds normal to me. The title of our show was almost hard to get out. Now that I look at the title that we picked, we have six words and only one of them doesn't have a start with a C.
That's quite funny, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a lot of...
It's the five C's. It's like you're picking a diamond. That's only three C's or whatever, isn't it? Four C's? I can't remember. Cut, clarity, color, and carrots?
Cut.
That's four C's.
Like cut, clarity, and carrots, yeah.
Cut, clarity, color, and carrots.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, that's four C's. We've got five C's.
We got five C's. We're better.
Like 25% better.
Something like that.
Yeah. Nice.
So what you been up to?
We're diamonds in the rough. There you go. What have I been up to? Gosh, you know, quite a bit of work stuff. But beyond all of that, last night, it stopped raining yesterday afternoon, briefly. We've had just a terrible turn of weather. And I looked outside and I thought, this is the moment I've been waiting for. And so I rushed outside and did my last mow.
Are you serious? This early in the season, you can do your last mow?
Yeah, pretty much. Actually, I don't know if that's going to be entirely true. It's been such a terrible season, summer this year, that it's been short. And so it very well could be. I really don't know for certain, right? Time will tell. Yeah. But I looked outside and I was like, this is it. Do it. You're not going to get another chance. And sure enough, it started bucketing with rain at 4 o'clock in the morning. So I'm glad I got it done. But anyway, that's been the peak of my week, is getting the decision to get that done.
Yeah. So like you, I have been absolutely swamped with work. And I mean, hey, cards on the table. This is a shorter show for two reasons today. One is because there's not a whole lot of news going on right now. I expect it to be kind of quiet over the next month leading up to...
Yeah, the run up to Ignite, right?
And then, but the other side is CJ and I are absolutely swamped with work right now. So we both, we were on the phone about 20 minutes ago. He was driving into work and I was like, can we make this a short show? I have a hard stop. And you're like, I have a hard stop too. I'm like, okay, let's just, what do we have for show notes? And there's not a whole lot. So we're going to go ahead and dive right into it, but it will be a shorter show. One thing I do want to share, I guess the other thing though, is like the one kind of sidebar thing is you got your last mow in. I found it on a car that is not relatively mainstream. I guess you could say that. I have one car that's not relatively mainstream and it's a newer model. It is apparently not uncommon for these car manufacturers to come up with an innovative windshield wiper solution. And so they get a company that makes windshield wipers to make them their wiper solution. But until the car is more mainstream and it's more mass market,
the blades?
You can only get the blades from the manufacturer.
So wait, let me guess, they're cost efficient.
No.
Yeah.
So just in principle, I refuse. So I'm talking about I have a Tesla Model X that I've had for about a year. And it's got a really cool wind. When you see the windshield wipers, you're like, oh yeah. And I know that there's a new thing that they've come up with the whole electromagnetic rails and all that kind of stuff, but that's patent. That's coming way down the road. It's got a cool setup to where instead of them spraying the windshield wiper fluid onto the windshield from up under the hood, there's a hose connected to the wiper. And so as the wiper goes, it sprays the stuff from the wiper itself.
I see.
You don't get this like, you know, way big spray, and it's much more efficient. It works great. But in principle, I wasn't going to call the Tesla service center and ask for a new set of wiper blades and say, how can I buy them? Because I think that's just absolutely ridiculous. That's like calling someone to going into the car dealership just to get your oil changed or to get your car detailed. It's like, that's unnecessary. It's stupid.
Sure.
So I went, I tried four different kinds of blades from different places. I checked, you know, even did my research. Is there anything, where do you find the special Tesla blades? And everyone's like, service center. I'm like, that's stupid. I'm not doing it. Well, I finally gave up and I said, fine, I'll go with a service center. And the nice thing is they bring a mobile service center. A guy came out in a van yesterday. And I was like, look, I'm just going to tell you straight up. This is pissing me off that I got to call you guys to do this. And I know this is going to cost me more than it should. And I know I should only be paying about, even a nice windshield wiper is going to be like $20 a blade. So yeah. I'm like, I know I should only be spending $40. And I know you guys are going to charge me $70 for this, which they did. But I was like, so seriously, like, what are you putting on the car that I can get? And he goes, well, that's the funny part, because you can't get it. I'm like, are you serious? He goes, and I know that people are going to blame Tesla for this. He said, but I just started working for Tesla in the last 2 months. He goes, I specialize on European cars. He goes, Porsche does this, Jaguar does this, Mercedes does this. He goes, they all do it with a brand new model and everybody has this problem. If you get a car, I was like, but yeah, but I mean, if somebody got like an Audi A4, and he goes, that car's been around for a while and there's a lot of them on the road. So you can buy those windshield wipers aftermarket. Mm. Like, okay, I get it. But
proprietary window wipers. Who would have thought, eh?
So the wiper itself, the blade has every like half an inch, there's a pinhole in the blade itself so that the wiper fluid goes to the length of the blade and sprays onto the windshield right before the blade hits it and washes it off.
Gotcha.
It's a great setup.
I can see, I'm just picturing Tim Cook trying to sell this on stage in an Apple keynote. It's profound. We've put a pinhole in your wiper blade.
It's absolutely ingenious and beautiful.
It's innovative.
It's like an Apple solution though. That's exactly what it is. But at any rate, oh wait, hey, I do have an update about the podcast. I have two updates that I'll share with you really quick. The first one is, last week or 2 weeks ago, we introduced a new feature for our site to where now if you share any of our episode links on Twitter, we use a thing called a Twitter card where you can now, users can stream an episode or play an episode straight from a Twitter post. So if anybody shares it, not just us, it'll show up. Dude, that's actually had an impact on our downloads.
Really?
It has helped us see, I think we've almost bumped by about 20 to 25%.
What?
Yeah, go look at the numbers. It's pretty damn surprising.
Wow, that's really cool. I played around with that. It's actually pretty sweet. Like how you get the little player and it'll play right there and all that sort of stuff. It's kind of awesome. And it just required a little bit of metadata on the page, right? To pull it off.
All you end up doing is just, there's a handful of metadata tags you have to put in on every single page or on the page where you want this to happen. And so when you put a link on Twitter, Twitter goes to the site, indexes it, kind of the same way like the Open Graph stuff does with like Facebook, you post a link there.
Yeah.
And if you use a specific card called a player and then you point to a link, what it does is it opens up an iframe and points to that link. And so all I did with that link is that every episode has its own page that has the audio HTML tag that points to the MP3. So that it's super simple to do. And thankfully with Hugo, it was like an absolute breeze to implement it. So it's pretty cool. That's one podcast update. The other one, though, is a little bit of bad news that I found out about earlier this week. So we have a show that was booked for Ignite, and we said it was going to be a live show, same video streaming show that we've done in the past. But we had a meeting with all the podcasting people for Ignite earlier this week, and we come to find out that this year, Ignite is not going to allow people to use the live stream TV desk, video desk like they've done in the past. They're using it. They have it booked 100% of the time for content that they're going to push out. They're not going to let third parties use it. So we do have a show scheduled, but I don't really understand the value that they're doing with this, because we have a show scheduled, but it's not a live show. It's just one that we're going to get to record and grab it. We get to use the podcast booth. So it's really no different than anything else that we've done at Ignite. We just lost the live show. So
yeah, gotcha. Well, we will record and attempt to get it out that day. And I guess out that day, or maybe the next day, maybe overnight or something. I don't know. We'll figure it out. But for those who are in attendance, they'll still get to come and attend at the podcast booth, right?
They will get to be there, yes. They will not get to So it's in those glass booths, like the clear booths where people can watch us record. But
oh, yeah, but not sit in.
They won't sit in and hear it. It won't be live. That's, I don't know if they have like a listener thing that they're going to do too, but I don't know. I'm sure we're going to have other interviews that are going to be lined up. We're not just doing the one. It's just, we just have one that's listed in the, it's going to be in the schedule, but I don't get how what the value is there if they can't watch it, if they can't really listen in live. But at any rate, I just wanted to update people because I was under the impression that we were going to have that. We don't. Nobody does.
Yeah.
So is what it
okay.
is.
Okay. Ah, bummer. All right.
Why don't we go ahead and dive into the news?
Let's do it.
Struggling to reproduce problems in your code base? Successful software starts with Raygun. Raygun provides application performance monitoring unlike anything that you've experienced before, offering greater clarity around how your software is performing for your customers than any other APM provider. Easily detect and diagnose issues impacting end users and monitor every part of your stack in one place. It's time to get back to building great software instead of fighting it. Start your journey to better software quality and try Raygun for free at raygun.com today.
A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery from individual items to entire team sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvePoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com.
If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, would you take it? Because our friends over at Nintex want to give you a gift. The gift of time. Seriously. If you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities and most recently, a new e-sign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to spend it however you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at nintex.com.
Okay, CJ, we have 3 things that we want to talk about today. I've got one, you've got one, and then we've got one that we want to highlight here. And I want to highlight the ShareGate one first. So ShareGate is a sponsor of ours. And they have a lot of people know everything about ShareGate in terms of that they are a fantastic, if not the industry leading solution for migrating content to SharePoint, between SharePoint sites. To me, they're the industry standard. I don't just say that because they're a sponsor. I say it because they pretty much are. But as you and I've talked about, they have another product that's been incubating, they've been using, they've been selling recently. It's called Overcast. Now, this is a pretty cool thing because what it does is it looks at you hook it up to your Azure subscription and it watches your Azure subscription and it looks at things that you are not using or things that you may be able to, basically, where are you wasting your money?
Yep.
You may have these different things that you don't realize that you're actually spending, like where did you leave the lights on? You can go turn the bathroom light off. Nobody's in there the whole day.
Yeah.
So what they've done, and it's a pretty cool solution. I had it hooked up to my Slack. I've got it in an email. I'm now using the email capability now, where it sends you an email once a week or once every 2 weeks. I can't remember which one it is. But it sends you an email on a regular basis and says, hey, you could save this much annually if you do these changes. And the free version just lets you know that, hey, this is what we think we can do for you. The paid version is, here are the specific things you should go do. Well, one of the things they've done is they've created a white paper, a free checklist that's got 23 bonus tips and practices, but that inside of this white paper, in addition to things that you can do to optimize compute instances, network services, databases, storage, monitoring, pricing tiers, and subscriptions. It's called the Ultimate Azure Cost Optimization Checklist for Cloud Teams. So I will have a link to it in our show notes, but all you got to do is plug in your name, your email address, and click the button and you get your free checklist right away and see if there's value to it. There's really no downside to signing up to it because you are going to at least see like, hey, what kinds of things can they actually find? And look, yeah. I'm a small business. They've even said to me, you can save $600 a year. And I'm an individual not spending a ton of money on Azure. So that
right.
they can do that. I'm like, I can only imagine what they could do for you guys.
Yeah, exactly. They've taken a lot of the things that they've learned from what they've seen. And my understanding is they've taken a lot of things that they've learned from what they've seen in people's Azure tenancies and how to save money and made this checklist, this really helpful, you know, handy checklist of just even just some of the basics, like just how to turn certain things on or off or monitor certain things to help you save cost. And then, so if you go through the checklist and you're like, yep, those are all applicable to me, rather than having to do the checklist every month yourself, you could, I guess what they're trying to say here is you can use our service to help do this automatically for you.
Yeah.
Or, you know, help monitor this stuff for you, which is, you know, that's totally fair enough. So on the one hand, they're sharing a bunch of their learning with you for free through this checklist, and they hope that you try out their service to help you get on top of your Azure spend. I actually really like those emails because it says your bill has increased 5% this month or something like that, right? And you're like, huh, I wonder why that is. And so you'll click the link and dive in and see exactly what's going on. But it's very helpful.
It really is. I mean, yeah, it shows you how much it's gone up, and it shows you, hey, well, you could save, you know, we think that there's this much that you could actually save by doing certain things. So if I had to give you a call to action and put my marketing hat on, go sign up for the free checklist that we have. The link is sharegate.com/ultimate-azure-optimization-checklist-cloud-team, or just go to the show notes.
So yeah, click on the show notes.
Yeah, just click on the show notes. Go there to grab it. Go review it and say, yeah, these are things that I could definitely do. Then go sign up for the service, the free service, and just get the notifications to see the dollar amounts that they think that they could save you.
Yeah.
Decide, yeah, this is really valuable.
Make your own decisions. Yeah.
So it may, I mean, a lot of times too, if you look at it, it may actually save, the money you save may pay for the service.
Oh, yeah. I think that's their whole proposition, right? Is
oh, sure.
Give you more than you pay, for sure. A lot more, perhaps.
Now, the other thing that I want to go into before we go into yours is there's a bit of a competition thing that I wanted to share. You go into more of the heated competition, I guess. But Google had an announcement this week that they were investing $3.3 billion or 3 billion euros for expanding the European data centers. It is primarily around like clean stuff that they're doing. They're not only going to expanding their data centers, but also adding it. But they've got things like they're going to be, we're going to see like an investment or supporting up to 13,000 full-time jobs in the European Union. It includes the construction of more than new energy infrastructure within the EU. Among those things, it'll be involved in a new offshore wind project in Belgium, 5 solar energy projects in Denmark, and 2 wind energy projects in both Sweden and Finland. So there are also other projects that are not included in this announcement or in this dollar amount that are also going to happen in the US or South America. I thought for a second you had barbecue.
No, that was the March of the Dark Forces, yeah. Or whatever it's called. I'm just mocking Google a little bit. Isn't it funny that marching into Europe and suddenly getting serious about expansion, and maybe somebody's woken up over there. The Dark Lord Sundar has gone, actually, Microsoft are getting kind of far ahead and we're being whopped in Europe by regulators and so forth. Maybe we should invest there first rather than just thinking we'll get away with doing what we've done in the US over there. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe I'm being quite cynical about that. I don't know.
I'm sure you are. But I mean, it's nice to see competition is good, and it would be nice to see Microsoft pushed for their data centers. I mean, I know that AWS is still considered the big dog, which is funny because Azure has a bigger network and a bigger footprint worldwide than AWS has. And Google is like the third one behind everybody else. Seeing more competition not only brings out the best in company, well, the best or the worst in company. So I go for the competition's good. So,
hey, speaking of competition and Microsoft, I should actually stick a link in that. This is totally off the cuff. It's not in our notes. Have you watched the new Gates documentary on Netflix yet?
Oh, no, I haven't, but it's on my list.
It's a 3-piece miniseries, like a 3-episode series. It's not very long. Each one's an hour long, but it's really interesting. I actually thought it was very well done. Mm. And it goes a little bit into a little bit of that period of Microsoft with the DOJ and how Gates was being portrayed in the media and how he felt about it and all of that sort of stuff. It was quite interesting from that angle. Competition just made me think about that piece of the series. Mm. But it also goes into the founding of the Gates Foundation, his mother, a lot of background about his family and his mother, and Microsoft and Ballmer and Paul Allen and nuclear energy is the most interesting. I found the most interesting piece was the last episode where he talks about what he's trying to do with nuclear energy and how the trade wars have basically stopped in its tracks this deal of building these new test reactor in China. They were very close to or underway in building. And there's basically this new type of reactor called a traveling wave reactor that he's pioneering and trying to get built, which basically uses old spent nuclear fuel and burns it even further. Gets all of the energy out of it, basically. It's this potentially groundbreaking new energy source that he's trying to get over the line. And anyway, the last episode goes into that in quite a lot of detail. It's very interesting.
Oh, it's cool. I've seen people rave about it, and it's been on my list waiting for it to come out. And just, I've been, like our work comment we had earlier, we've both been swamped.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Everybody thinks about Bill from Microsoft, and it does talk about Microsoft quite a lot, but it also goes into a lot about what he's doing with this foundation and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, obviously, and all the other work that they're working on. So definitely worth a watch.
Cool.
Speaking of ranty competition stuff, there is a great video I came across. I actually read one of this guy's blog posts first about WeWork. This guy called Scott Galloway. He's a professor at New York University's Stern School of Business. Anyway, this guy's got a way with words and writes some very funny blogs and also puts out some quite interesting videos. And one of the videos, I got onto him through the WeWork IPO blogs that he'd written and that are called WeWTF. But anyway, that's worth an interesting read in and of itself. But the one that I came across on his YouTube channel was one called Could Microsoft Teams Be the End of Slack? And we've talked about this in a little bit on the show in the past about, you know, Slack versus Microsoft Teams. But anyway, his video is quite interesting because it sort of talks about the business aspects of how Slack is offering their service and how Microsoft is offering theirs and the pros and cons of each and what Slack will see over the next few years and competing with Microsoft and how Microsoft's worked in the past. And it's just an interesting take from a business angle of this competition or the story as it's playing out. And I thought it was quite interesting. So if you want to go hear his take on this from a sort of a business school professor point of view, it's a short watch, but quite interesting.
Ah, cool. Very cool.
The highlight for me was when he compared Microsoft to the Death Star and how destroying Alderaan was basically inevitable. But anyway, he's pretty entertaining to watch, I think, anyway. The WeWork one is really interesting because he's basically watching the collapse of WeWork in real time and commenting on it. And it's pretty interesting.
I will have to go take a look at these.
Yeah.
Good finds there. Well, sticking with our short show idea, want to go on to picks?
Let's do it.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from business and organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
Mr. Johnson, do you have a pick for us this week?
I do. This one blew my mind. It's a blog post by this guy called Wayne Hale, who, if you've ever watched any of the live streams on NASA, you may have heard this guy in the past. He was flight director on 25 or 50 missions or something ridiculous. Like, the guy's a legend in the NASA circles, NASA leadership. And it worked on the shuttle program for a long time. Anyway, he's put a blog post up called Oops. It was posted on September the 25th, yesterday, from when we were recording this. Anyway, it talks about what happens in space with the shuttle, what the plan was if the shuttle doors couldn't close properly. And it goes through designing procedures for manually latching the doors closed, because in space, they had to be open so that the shuttle could dissipate heat using its radiators. But once the shuttle doors were closed, basically within an hour, they had to deorbit, right? Because the shuttle would start building up heat internally and it needed to get down. Anyway, they talks about procedures for what happens if the doors don't close. And so they flew with all these tools on the shuttle so that they could manually latch the doors closed. However, this is where the oops part comes in. When they were carrying the space lab module, in the shuttle payload bay, or when they carried things in the payload bay, it was possible that when the doors closed, they couldn't get to the latches to manually latch them closed, right? And so in that case, they'd open the doors back up and they'd jettison the payload, close the doors, and then manually latch them from the inside of the payload bay and then get back through the airlock back into the shuttle. However, with Spacelab, with the module, it was basically bolted into the shuttle payload bay and they couldn't get rid of it. And so there was this problem where an astronaut would be in the payload bay, close the doors, latch the things closed, and then couldn't get back into the shuttle because the Spacelab thing was blocking the airlock, and they couldn't get past because it was so massive it couldn't get past. What do you think their solution might have been to that problem? Any ideas? Spoiler alert. Deorbit with the astronaut in the payload bay.
Are you serious?
Yes, that was the only solution. So the astronaut would find some tie-down straps at the back of the orbiter bay and strap themselves in for the ride of their life.
Oh my God, with no windows or anything to see what the status was or anything.
No. They would be basically in the payload bay in a depressurized part of the space shuttle during the deorbit and re-entry into the atmosphere. It was never done, obviously, or maybe not obviously, but it was never done. And there were a couple of issues with that. One, the astronaut's suit had a cooling system that would rely on the vacuum of space. So the way that the suit cooled itself down was this water-based system, but it required basically no atmosphere to work properly. So as they came down in the shuttle and the pressure started building up from the atmosphere, this thing would stop working and the astronaut would slowly start cooking. And so basically it was like, get down as fast as possible, chill the suit as much as possible while you're in space, deorbit, and hope that they can get out of the suit before it gets too hot. But that wasn't the biggest problem. The biggest problem, apparently, was once they were down on the ground and had landed, getting the astronaut out of the payload bay was more of a problem because the doors are not made to be opened in gravity, right? So when there's gravity, the orbiter would only ever be in the orbiter processing facility where they had the right equipment to bolt onto the doors with a special sort of truss type system that would very carefully open the doors in a very carefully managed way as to not break them, right? Because they're quite flimsy in actual fact. They're not structurally sound just by pulling one end of them. Anyway, so apparently the biggest problem was trying to work out how to get the astronaut out of the payload bay, and it was going to take hours and hours and hours. Anyway, I thought this whole thing was absolutely fascinating, that the solution was to leave him in the payload bay, him or her in the payload bay.
This is incredible, dude. This goes down with probably the most, like, I can't wait to read this. The way you just described it, I know the video is recording. My mouth has been on the ground.
Yeah.
My jaw's been on the ground listening to this. But this goes down with like the first time that I read what the pattern was for an abort and what the RTLS return to launch site, like what the plan was for the shuttle. If you are interested in that, oh my God, I got to find that and make that a link of mine and talk about it one time. If you don't want to wait for it, go do a search for the NASA plan for RTLS, return to launch site. Mm. And specifically they never had to test it. They never did it. It's nuts. It's absolutely nuts.
They never had to use that procedure. But I think, was it John Young had some famous line about that maneuver. And I can't remember what it was. It was something about, I don't know. Actually, I can't remember. I won't do it service by trying. But it was quite a good quote about something about the maneuver and how impossible it was and all that. Anyway, you're trying to find it, aren't you?
RTLS requires continuous miracles interspaced with acts of God to be successful.
There you go. Yeah. Yes. And Scott Manley actually tried RTLS in the Orbiter program. You know, there's that free Orbiter simulator that you can go download. He tried it and it was pretty entertaining. He was successful, actually. It was quite good. But anyway, go check that out. Anyway, Oops by Wayne Hale.
Yeah. So the link, if you go do a search for RTLS, John Young RTLS, first link in Google that comes back is from a site called tested.com. That's got even a picture showing like what happens. It's insane. sure would have been cool to see them try that one time, but with no astronauts on board and with a shuttle that could be ditched.
The closest they had was one of the orbiter's main engines went out and they had an abort to orbit, but not to the correct orbit. That was as close to abort to RTLS that they had.
I am tempted to make that my link today, but I'm not going to because I have another one that is not space related. Although the demo that someone is using the space thing, they actually use a NASA.com email address.
Oh yeah, they do too.
My reference here is to a GitHub project that is an extension for your Git source control solution. It's called, you know how we have the Git blame option?
Yes.
Well, this one's even better. This is Git blame someone else. And it allows you to take a commit and reassign it to someone else. So the best part about this, you can do, so you get it the way you do it, is you just say Git space blame dash someone dash else. You put the author that you want to blame and, or you want to assign it to, and then the commit SHA, SHA. What happens after you do this, the best part is that when you see the command where it goes, it will, the animation of it shows this on the project. It says, this person is now the author of this commit. And then the next comment is, you're officially an asshole.
I like the disclaimer at the bottom. This changes not only who authored the commit, but the listed committer as well. It is also something I wrote as a joke. So please don't run this against your production repo and complain if the script deletes everything.
The guy even made a fake Linus comment, the guy behind Git. And he says, I love Git blame someone else. He goes, yeah, it's not even really his quote.
Yeah, just made that up. Fair enough. His fake comment, his fake commit here. Yeah. Nice. That's a good one. I like Git blame someone else. I have to use that. Yeah.
Cool. All right, CJ, shorter show for us today. Hopefully we'll be back at it, back to normal. There'll be some real news that we can actually talk about next week. We've got a fun interview coming up. Actually, sorry, we have a fun interview coming up next week. So, yeah.
Do you want to sneak peek it?
Yes. Well, assuming things don't get, somebody doesn't change the schedule on us, the guys over at Circle CI, which is a content, a CI and CD service, we've talked about Azure DevOps and pipelines in the past. Circle CI is another service that does this. I've used them in the past. Absolutely love their service. It's fantastic. It's like a competitor also to Travis. They haven't done a lot of investment around, they've done a lot of investments to their Windows story. Where before, when I used them, they were only Linux and you had to use, I think it was called AppVeyor as another service that that you could use Windows-based machines. Well, they've made a lot of investments in being more Windows-friendly. Circle CI has. We reached out to them and I believe the CEO is going to join us to talk about some of their investments here. They did one thing, and I'll mention it to him. They did one thing that I haven't seen anybody else do, including Azure Pipelines, that I absolutely loved. When you had a problem with a build, you could request it to be rerun. But when they do all their builds, they all happen in containers. And what you have the ability to do is you can say, don't blow the container away. And it sticks around for about an hour and allows you to remotely SSH into the container and poke around to see what happened before the container is thrown away. That is awesome.
That's really nice. It's good for debugging your builds if you've got complicated stuff and something goes wrong.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Nice. That's really cool. Okay, I'll look forward to that.
Yep. So we will talk to him next week. And I think this will be episode 323, unless we have to reschedule and change the dates around a little bit. Always happens. So
we'll see. Well, now we've said it. Now, now we probably will. Right on. All right. Thanks, AC.
Yeah, man. Good to talk to you.
Later.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3 and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com. where you'll also find notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.